Alexander Snitker, libertarian, Republican, and political hack. And Adrian Wiley, born-again anarchist and political has-been. Banter, blather, and joke about current events while attempting to figure out whether to keep trying to salvage our constitutional republic or just stock up on marshmallows to roast on the smoldering embers of society. It's time for Unattended Baggage.
Why, thank you, Scott. Hello, everyone in Podcastville or Internet land or wherever you may reside. This is Alex, co-host Unattended Baggage. Along with me is my radio life mate, the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Adrian, the felonious philosopher, Wiley. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well, and welcome to the next episode of the Florida Gulf Coast Fishing Report. I'm Adrian, the snook whisperer, Wiley, here with my beloved sidekick, Bubba, the bait shop boy, Snitker. And we're going to talk about what's going on inshore fishing from Punta Gorda all the way up to Crystal River along your Gulf Coast, Florida. The first thing we have to report is speckled trout. Now, Bubba, I know you've been out there, with the stinky squid fingers trying to catch you some speckled trout. They have been running like nobody's business throughout the flats.
I'll tell you what, boy.
They have just been biting on everything.
On it all.
Biting on the love lures.
Twice.
I would like to do a fishing show.
I'm the worst fisherman ever in the history of fishermen.
You know, I actually got that impression.
I'm really bad.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like one of the things that you would be any good at.
No, I suck at fishing. If I had to survive by fishing, I would end up becoming a cannibal.
Well, you know, there's lots to be said for cannibalism. I can't wait for that.
But I'm just saying, I would rather hunt.
Eat me some human flesh.
I would rather hunt humans than try to fish.
You know, fishing is, it can go either way. Sometimes I'm a good fisherman, and other times I just suck, but you know.
I've gone fishing maybe 10 times in my life.
Really?
I've never once caught a fish that I would have been able to eat in any of the times that I've went fishing.
Oh, dude, that's just sad.
It is.
That makes me sad.
I'm sorry.
I should take you fishing. Would you like to go fishing with me, young man?
I would like to go. I'm not going to lie to you. I would like to go fishing and actually catch something that I could. I don't even have to eat it.
Right.
I just want to know that I could have caught a fish that I could eat.
Something more than a pinfish is what you're saying. Or a catfish.
Yeah. My next door neighbor, I really ought to go fishing with him, actually.
Because yeah,
he's a phenomenal fisherman.
Yeah. Well, doesn't he own a charter company?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why isn't he taking
his invited? He's invited me. I suck at fishing so bad that it's not something that I'm really.
We could even barter a sponsorship on the show for a couple of fishing trips.
Like, I wouldn't even want to go over there because I think he would think so much less of me as a human being by going out with him to fish, because then at that point he would realize how bad I am at fishing. And I've told him I'm bad at fishing, but it's still one of those things where he hasn't seen it himself to be able to kind of gauge
it. Well, when you go out with a guide, I mean, they expect you to be bad at fishing. They're doing everything for you other than reeling the damn thing in.
Yeah, but I really want to, I really suck at it.
Honestly, when you go out with a guide, you're not even really doing the fishing.
Yeah, I mean,
I really ought
to tell him. I really ought to go out with him one time, but like I said, I've just been so embarrassed is probably a good word for it.
So what you're saying is that you would not be very good at the Florida Gulf Coast Fishing Report podcast.
Here's the thing. I could probably talk a good game about fishing. Like,
really?
I could research it and talk about fishing. It's not like fishing. I like to eat fish. So like there's always something there and I can talk about a whole bunch
of
stuff.
So you like fish sticks?
Yeah, I do.
What are you, a gay fish?
Oh, I love South Park.
So what's going on in your world, man?
Well,
you got a story to tell?
Yeah, I do, actually.
Do you have a bumper music for the story to tell?
No. This isn't one of those. Not one of those stories. We haven't done one of those stories for a while, but this week will not be one of those weeks.
You're still telling a story. Can I have the bumper music? Do you not have the bumper music?
You can't have it right this very second.
Oh, my God.
Hold on.
You know what? I love the bumper
music. Hold on. Let me see if I might be able to do it. Maybe. Well, it depends on how fast the computer's running. We'll see how fast the computer's running.
Here's a tale you'll never forget.
Ouch!
And now get up to bed.
Ah, come on, Daddy. Tell me a story.
That makes me happy.
Oh, that's crazy.
It's all simple right. things.
So this story will be, I guess, entitled The Job Week Number 2 and Success. First, the thing I would like to do is I would like to thank some people. I would like to thank Annie. Annie had sent a recommendation in for me for a job at a place. I ended up not going with that place, but I really do appreciate it. Somebody was listening and trying to get me involved in a place. Tim Erdocker, who's I think listens to the show sometimes. I know that he's trying to get me involved in a couple places. But so Thursday or Wednesday, and Adrian.
Yeah. I mean, how about that glowing recommendation I wrote you?
Oh, huh? Yeah. No. That glowing recommendation. Same with Danielle, who's been my rock. You know, there's the other people that have been involved as well.
So, I'd like to thank the Academy for creating this award.
Greg Rowe gave me a good interview or a good recommendation. Jack Mariano did. Not that the person that took the job ever looked at any of those recommendations, but I'm actually going to write all those down and use them later on in case this other job doesn't work.
Right.
So you're
selling Amway.
No, I'm not selling Amway. Jesus, no, I'm not selling Amway. So I went to an interview, and this guy and this company does like employee benefits for companies. So it's a business to business sale, and that's really the thing that I think I'm best at.
So you're a small business owner. You want to have an employee benefits package. You know, you want to offer healthcare and 401k and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a pain in the ass for a small business owner to do that. So I hire you to just take care of that.
You can hire me. Now, again, here's the thing. I haven't actually started the position yet, so I haven't really started going through everything.
Well, fuck you. I'm going to go with the other guy.
I was
going to hire you, but now you talk like that. Fuck you. I'm going with the other guy.
Well, you know, let me go ahead and figure out what's going on with the job first before we do all that. So, but I decided this week on Friday, you know, I was thinking about it, and I think I'm going to go with this position. You know, it's a risk, but at the same time, I think that it fits my narrative. And the one thing is I really felt good about the interview with the person.
Right. And that's important.
And that really is the most important thing, especially if you're going to do sales, is that you feel like the people that you're going to go work with are supportive of you, that are going to help you through it. And the other thing is that this guy actually started complaining about millennials right off the bat when we first got in there.
Fucking millennials.
And he was like, look, I don't want to sound jaded, but so many of these people that I interview don't show up to work and they think they're going to be successful without showing up to work. And I'm just like, yeah, no, I hear you there, man. You know, I hear you. You know, we have a plan. You work the plan. You'll be successful, but you have to, you know, you got to work the plan. You got to be here. And when he started telling me the plan, I'm like, well, I could do that. You know, you got to hit 35 doors a day, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. You go out and you knock on 35 doors a day,
which
you're done by 3 to 5 p.m.
Like your dream job, because
I love going business to business.
Go figure. I don't know what kind of, you know, step right below psychopath that is, that makes you want to. Yeah, seriously, it's somewhere between manic and psychopathic behavior is I like door knocking.
Okay, you want me to explain it to you? I'm going to explain it to you. And maybe you'll understand, maybe you won't.
Well, you can go ahead and attempt to explain it to me, but I will never understand.
Okay, I thoroughly enjoy, legitimately enjoy seeing what other people do for a job. Like, I enjoy what those other companies are doing. Like, I like to find out, what are they doing to make money? I don't want to say like a Mike Rowe.
I was just
going
to say,
that.
Yeah, fucking wannabe Mike Rowe.
But no. But here's the thing, though. Before I ever knew who Mike Rowe was, when I got out of the Marine Corps and I started selling copiers and this guy sold copiers too back in the day.
Oh, there you go.
Like, so it was one of those things where he totally knew I was, because he's like, look, man, you've done the grind, but you know, you got to do a grind, but it's no grind like the grind you do with copiers.
Right.
Like, it's a lot easier than that. And I'm like, really? Like, you know, it was like Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday in the field, Monday in the office, Friday in the office, you know. And the way he talked about it was like he was trying to prepare me for what the hard work would be.
Right.
But everything he would say, I'm like, wow, that's not really that hard. Like,
well, here's the thing. And again, I don't want to bust on millennials because we do that a lot. And it's almost a bad cliche at this point. Millennials have their high points. But one of the things that they don't is they have a very hard time with interpersonal interaction.
Yeah.
You know, with people that they don't know.
Yeah.
You know, so making a phone call or knocking on a door it's difficult for them. You know, it seems to be, and we're kind of like in that in-between phase. You know what I'm saying? As Gen Xers, we're kind of like, you know, we can go either way. I just don't like it because I hate all humans. You know,
I would rather knock on the door first and go to the location than call on the phone first.
I agree with that. I agree with that. Yeah. Of the two things, cold calling is much more difficult.
Well, the other thing is that the other thing I've noticed is this. If you follow up with a phone call and be like, hey, I stopped in there the other day and then continue the conversation, the secretary or the receptionist isn't nearly as rude with you. And I think that the reason is, and this is going to sound a little weird to say it this way, but she knows that you know where they're at.
Like a threat kind of
thing? Not a threat kind of thing, but like if you know...
This is Alex Nicker. I stopped by the other day, and if you don't put me through to the CEO, I'm going to come back.
Well, no. I never... Look, I'm nice... Here's the thing.
I can see where that would be.
No. I am nice as pie on the phone. I never say... I would never say anything.
I mean, it's not...
But if you're the person on the other end, you're like, I stopped by the other day. Oh, shit, he knows where we're at. I can't be a dick. I can't be rude to this person.
You think that's what it is?
I think it's a little bit to do with it. Don't get me wrong. Some receptionists are just going to be... Look, some receptionists are mean to you when you walk in the door. I mean, there's... You know, some of that just happens naturally.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
But it's not... But if they know you stop by... And you get to use that, then it's not just a regular telemarketer.
I think they're just afraid you'll come back and try to talk to them.
Don't get me wrong. Another technique I use, I would definitely call what I would call soft Chinese water torture, which is I'll keep calling you every week until you give me an appointment.
Right. I will come and sit in your lobby all day.
Well, like I said, no, I've told people on the phone. Like I
wouldn't even talk to you.
Like when I've sold copiers, I said, look, give me an appointment. If you don't like what I have to say, I'll never call your guys again.
Right.
Like, I've done that. I've said, let me sit down 5 minutes. You don't like what I have to say? I'll never call you again.
Has that resulted in a close?
Yeah, I got a close on that one.
Did you?
He was like, the guy on the phone was like, I think he was closer in the market than he let on to be.
Right.
But he was, you know, come on in then. Like, some guys like that. I mean, don't get me wrong, though. I actually think I sell better to women than I do to men, though.
Right.
I think I do sell better to women than men, but. I don't even know why that is, but
it's that gay vibe you put off.
You think so? I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
Did I ever tell you about the time I sold copiers to the AIDS Healthcare Foundation?
No.
You want me to tell you that?
Tell the story. Sounds like a great story. We're still in story time.
So. I had a client when I was selling copiers called the AIDS Healthcare Foundation. It was in Florida.
Right.
And they used to buy a lot of copiers from me. Actually, used to buy copiers from me all the time because they had locations all over Florida.
Really? That surprises me that, you know, the AIDS, what is it called?
AIDS Healthcare Foundation.
AIDS Healthcare Foundation, that they were big enough to have, like, multiple locations with multiple copiers.
Oh, yeah, they got a lot of money. They got a lot of money. And
well, maybe they did in the 90s, not so much anymore.
Well, I wasn't selling in the 90s. It was 01 to 2010.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah,
okay.
So they had money.
I'm surprised they still had
money. They were living off that Magic Johnson money still.
I guess so, yeah.
Well, at any rate, so I sold...
I mean, because AIDS today, it's kind of like, you know...
You'd be surprised how much money that organization
is. It's a little more than the common cold.
Yeah, but because it still affects the gay community so much, and because, like, in South Florida, there's still, you know, a lot of people in the gay community.
Right.
Like, there's still a lot of money going in there. I mean, again, don't get me wrong, I haven't sold copiers to them for a long time.
Right.
But at any rate, I would have to go and do, demonstrations to the staff on how to use the machines.
Right.
So we sold one down in South Florida at one of the thrift stores that they have down there, because they have an AIDS Healthcare Foundation thrift store.
Right.
And the guy that was, this is the first time I actually ever felt like sexually harassed. Like, I really did feel sexually harassed at this one. So this guy, like, I walk in, I say my name is Alex, I'm here to give you guys a demonstration on the copy or show you how to use it. And he looked me up and down like I was a piece of meat. He looked me up and down like he was going to eat me. Like, but in a good way, or, you know, not in a good way, but like in a way that was not going to kill me, but like he was a big bald dude with and I have a beard at the time. He had a big beard going on and he was a big guy. Like, he was a real big guy.
You're describing me, dude.
You're bald, but you're not bald though.
Oh no, I'm not bald. No.
But he was bigger than you.
Big guy with a beard.
He had 6 inches on you height wise.
Yeah. Cause there's no way he had 6 inches on me the other way.
Nobody, he was a big
nobody
boy.
Does
but at any rate this guy looked me up and down, and he's the one I had to show how to use the machine. And when you show somebody how to use the machine, you're up, you're down, you're going up and through all the machines, so you at certain points you got to bend down.
Can you load the paper again?
He didn't say it like that, but he was just
load that paper, Alex.
I gotta tell you, I did feel sexually harassed at that time. Now I took it all in stride,
sure,
though. Yeah, I took
it
all in stride, though.
Yeah.
He was like, He did do the a couple times. Like, he looked me up and down. Like, he liked me, boy. He wanted some of me, boy.
Yeah. Oofa. Yeah.
So, but, you know, and I didn't want to be somebody's bitch. So, you know.
Right, right. Well, you know, go ahead. I'm not going to steal that segue. It's your segue.
No.
Go take it.
Well, if we're in Massachusetts and we do it, we might actually end up being somebody's bitch.
There you go. Because you were so proud.
Yes.
You were so proud of that. I was almost going to take that segue. You teed it up for me, but I couldn't because you were just so proud of that.
So,
say the word bitch, you end up in jail being someone's bitch.
Yeah. So you got to be in the elimination of what is known as the First Amendment.
Yeah.
We are now seeing a bill being put forward in Massachusetts. In the Massachusetts State House, H. 3719, and it would prohibit the use of the big bad B word, known as bitch, when deployed to accost, annoy, degrade, or demean another person. So anyone who did this would be considered a disorderly person under state law, and the penalty could include up to $200 in fines or 6 months in jail.
Damn.
Like,
hang on a second. $200 fine or 6 months in jail.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not really equitable. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So what they're doing is, so they already have something that's saying a disorderly conduct law, and it already bans offensive and disorderly acts or language. So there's already a law that actually does this. And what they're doing is they're adding the word.
Most new laws.
Yeah. And they're adding the word bitch to this law. Like, it's amazing. Like, it's
okay. So hang on a second. Let me just make sure I understand. So it's only if you use the word bitch with the intent to accost, demean,
annoy,
or what was the other thing?
Something
else.
Hold on here. Let me.
So like when a pimp uses
demean, accost, annoy, degrade, or demean.
Degrade. Okay, that was the other one I was looking for. So if a pimp uses the word bitch,
like bottom bitch.
Yeah. Exactly. You're good to go because that's, you know,
an accurate description of what that person is within the hooker trade.
Not to mention, it's just another term for employee. Yeah. You know?
Could be.
Yeah. You know? Or if I talk about, you know, my number one bitch, you know.
Yeah.
My wife, who loves to be called number one bitch. No, she doesn't. But yeah, so only if it's used in a negative. So that would be essentially if it's used as hate speech. If it's used as a term of endearment, then it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. I guess
the argument, the defense would be, oh no, I didn't mean to annoy or demean or degrade or accost. I was using it as a term of endearment, bitch.
You know what? That's funny because I actually do use the word bitch as a term of endearment.
You know, it's like any other good cuss word. You can use it for just about anything that you want to. It can mean anything. I mean, shit can mean literally just about anything.
It's a big thing.
You
have it on the wall.
Yeah. Fuck. What can't you use fuck to mean? You know? So I don't know if this is really going to work out as planned, but you know, there is this thing called the First Amendment, at least for now, which means this is one of those stories that it's never going to pass. It's never going to make a committee. It's one of those things where somebody introduced a bill. It's not going to happen. But if it did, it would last about 30 seconds before the courts ruled it unconstitutional.
How many times have you said that about some kinds of pieces of legislation? Now, right now, today, you're probably right that using the word, you know, that this bill probably has no chance of being passed. And there is a clarifying thing that came there in the article that I'm looking at from Reason. It is clarified that on Tuesday that the bill was filed on behalf of a constituent exercising a right to directly petition the legislature. So the person that put this forward actually is backing off of saying, well, it wasn't me that did it. I did it on behalf of a petition or on behalf of a citizen in the state.
Yeah. And the woman who put it forward, you know, she feels like that the word bitch is demeaning in any context. But the reality is she's just a cunt.
But you know what? And we were,
you know, I hate it when gashes try to pull this shit. You know, those slits need to just be barefoot in the kitchen and shut the fuck up. But, you know, send hate mail
oh my
to.
God.
But here's the thing. The problem with this is the idea is, I don't think 10 or 15 or 20 years ago anyone in their right mind would have even put this forward. But I read a poll that was very alarming, that said that 51% of Americans now think that the First Amendment should be rewritten to include a caveat for hate speech.
Yes, yes.
And that to me is just, I mean, 51%, that's terrifying. That tells me that less than half of Americans really understand the concept behind freedom of speech, freedom in general. I mean, it's getting to the point where Americans no longer understand and no longer seem to want actual freedom. And that is what really the bottom line is. It's terrifying.
Yeah, yeah. So and let me break down the numbers a little bit just so you can see what's how it's been happening.
Right.
So 1,004 respondents, young people were the most ones to curb the free expression. 60% of millennials, so the people between 21 and 38, 60%. That the Constitution goes too far in allowing hate speech in modern America and should be rewritten. 48% of Gen Xers, 47% of baby boomers. So the majority of the millennials would make hate speech a crime. 54% said violators should face jail time. So sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will still end you in the pokey.
Right, right. And what that
or getting poked.
What that poll fails to point out is that if you actually begin to outlaw hate speech, you will absolutely guarantee that more people begin using whatever you deem as hate speech. So if you deem it as hate speech, it will become popular.
Well, here's the thing. This goes to show you that we've replaced education with indoctrination in schools. Like, that's the thing, is like, they weren't taught that people have the freedom to say what they want. They were taught that people should be, like, if it's at 60%,
they weren't taught that freedoms exist inherently in the human condition, that they were granted to us by God or by nature or by whatever. The fact that I exist, therefore I am a human with these rights, and that government cannot take them away. They were never taught that. They were taught that everything is a social construct.
Yeah.
You know, and can be, you know, granted or taken away by government. And that's the difference today.
Well, and they were taught that we're a democracy.
Right.
Which we're not.
Right. You know,
like a democracy, you can vote. 51 can vote to eliminate the rights of 49%.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
that's the thing. Like that. And that's what they're that's why they're doing the best that they can to eliminate civics in school and all. You're seeing how effective that they've been at this now. Because you have this generation of millennials that is going this way. Now, the ones behind them, though, are actually getting more on the, like, it's almost like the counterculture is going the other way.
Right. Well, this is one of those areas where, you know, thank God for boomers and older.
Yeah.
You know, because they're like, they're the ones saying, well, no, because they remember that people used to say when someone was being a total just racist, sexist, bigoted asshole, you know, people would look at them like, you know, yeah, he's an asshole, but it's a free country.
Yeah.
You know, we have to tolerate that. And people don't think that way anymore. But the problem is that when you create a situation where you don't tolerate that, eventually somebody is going to come along and say, well, we're not going to tolerate what you want to say.
Yeah.
You know, because it offends us. And it gets to a point where nobody can communicate anything other than the party line.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where, if you allow it to go this direction, that is the ultimate, you know, end point is China or, you know, Orwellian, you know, Ingsoc.
Yeah.
That's where you eventually, and that's an extreme case of it, but it's
how
it's,
extreme is it now?
Well, it's not very extreme yet. It's not. So we have to realize that we still live in a world where we can say almost anything we want. So we do still have that luxury, but the steps are there and the writing is on the wall when you have polls like this.
The system's in place.
The system is in place, the indoctrination is there, and you have a youth movement that doesn't believe in free speech anymore.
Yeah.
They believe in non-offensive speech, which is horrifying.
They believe that speech is violence. Like, if you say something that's wrong, that you've actually aggressed on that person.
Right.
And so they have the right to aggress back on you. Like, they don't, they're not viewing the difference between me saying something and me actually punching you in the face.
Right.
Like, and that's scary. It really is scary at the end of the day, because if you look at, like, a lot of these, you know, some of these Antifa protests and stuff like that, like, these people are trying to justify their actual assault on people by saying that that person said something that they didn't like.
I still can't find Antifa in any way, shape, or form frightening.
Well, I'll say that to Andy Ngo, who freaking got his head, he's got his skull cracked because they were, because they took a, you know, like bike chain locks and smacked him in the head with it and gave him and cracked his skull.
About damn time, then. You know, I mean, if you're going to act like that, might as well get fucking violent.
I mean, I guess, but I
mean, know, if we're going to have a civil war here, you guys need to step it the fuck up. You know, I mean, come on. I've been hearing about this shit. Civil war is coming. Civil war is coming. Where? You know, y'all look like a bunch of pussies to me.
Yeah, I guess.
You know? And all you fucking, you know, gun-toting, waving motherfuckers, you know, with the come and take it stickers on the back of your pickup truck. Bullshit. You ain't got the balls to do a goddamn thing. Because if you were going to get froggy and jump, you would have jumped by now.
I don't think that it's time. No, it's not time
fucking
for that.
Put up or shut up. You want a civil war? Come on.
What, are you going to bring a tank?
I'm not bringing nothing. I'm going to sit on the sidelines and eat popcorn.
Well, I know, but it's a good thing, too, because all the tanks...
Actually, I'll sell popcorn.
Well, it's a good thing, because none of the tanks will be here anymore, because they're all going to be in Syria.
Yeah, yeah. We'll go with it. We'll go with it.
Well, considering you were trying to actually... You were trying to do things that were going to hour number two... I had to get it back to something we were doing in hour number one.
Oh, I was going to take it to the Civil War thing. But
yeah, but why would you do... That's hour two. We talked about this in the pre-meeting.
I don't care about the show notes.
Oh,
you
my
should
God.
Know that by
oh,
now.
Oh, my God.
That's your thing. I don't even think we should have show notes. I think we ought to be one continuous stream of consciousness.
You, no.
I don't like all these rules and regulations. It's starting to piss me off.
All right. I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I had a little, wanted to have a little structure in order to have the show go very well.
Fucking links, you know.
I put up show notes for people so they can see the notes later on.
I mean, you even research some shit. What the hell, man?
I'm sorry. My bad.
You know, there was a time where I actually used to do this shit. Now we've gone so 180.
Oh, yeah.
Have we not?
Oh, no. We've completely gone 180.
Totally 180.
I was much more crazy on the radio. You were much more the level-headed person. I was much more just stream of consciousness stuff, and you would say there's topics we want to talk about before this break and all this kind of stuff.
You always wanted to talk about things like antiques and fishing and, you know.
Well, I never wanted to talk about antiques and fishing, though.
I'm pretty sure I remember that.
I never, ever wanted to talk about fishing. I mean, I think we've laid out pretty well the case of why I wouldn't have wanted to talk about fishing.
Yeah. Well, I think that's why we should talk about fishing, because I think you obviously have some trauma there.
Some trauma.
I think we need to
talk. You think I was abused as a little boy when I was fishing?
I think the fact that you never caught a fish as a child is something that's really held you back. And I think we need to explore, you know, that feeling. And we're in the tree of trust here.
Tell me about your mother.
This is a safe space.
Tell me about your mother.
I thought we were in the tree of trust.
Thought we were in the trust tree here. So I think what we really need to do, though, is that we really need to have a conversation with our president about what pulling troops out of countries actually means, and not to put in tanks in a country that you're saying you're moving troops out of.
Well, can you really say that he knows where he's moving troops? I mean, he doesn't know where he's putting a border wall, dude. He thinks he's building a wall in Colorado. You know? I mean, so.
I mean, he was kind of joking with that one, but.
I don't think he was.
You don't think he was? Huh?
I don't think he was. I think he got his geography completely wrong and
just thought it was Colorado that
just
borders.
Just covered it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. I think he just covered it.
So let's get back to the Pentagon thing.
People get confused with those square states. You know?
No, it can. No. I hear you there.
Yeah.
Now, the Pentagon is likely to order tanks and hundreds of soldiers to eastern Syria. This is what U.S. officials are telling Fox News.
Fucking
so
warmongers.
It wasn't like a tweet that Trump did saying that they're going to be doing it, but it was. But it is. You know, the official channels of the government that's saying that they're going to do this.
Well, here's the thing, though. I didn't really see a lot of this, but the 10,000 foot view impression that I got is that the generals are kind of like doing an end around on Trump on this. Does it seem that way, Or are they just like talking him into it? Because I still, and again, this, my impression is Trump sincerely wanted to pull the troops out of Syria.
Okay, so here's what happened, though. Let me just say this, though. So
okay.
The plans come one day after President Trump announced a permanent ceasefire in northeast Syria and said a small number of U.S. troops would guard oil fields previously held by ISIS and now in Syria Kurdish hands. We've secured the oil, and this is what he says. We've secured the oil, and therefore a small number of U.S. troops remain in the area where they have oil, and they're going to be protecting it and we'll be deciding what we're going to do with it in the future.
So, that right there is more of the angle. It's ISIS hasn't had these oil fields for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Assad had control of them.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, we're taking those fields away from Assad, not away from ISIS. That's what we're doing.
Yeah. I mean, and that's why. And that's why.
And
I
away
think,
from Russia.
And away from Russia. And that's why I think that they're bringing in the tanks. Because if you had the tanks there, that's reinforced armor.
Here's the thing. If Trump doesn't get ahead of this, this is going to be his biggest failure. You know, he screwed this up. He has screwed this up so badly. And it's because he has just, when it comes to, he can negotiate a deal all day long, but when it comes to actual foreign policy, he's just horrendous at it. He's completely clueless. He is totally out of his element. He originally
planned, you're out of your element, Donnie.
Oh yeah, he originally planned to pull the troops out of Syria, which would have been a good move. It would have screwed the Kurds.
Mm-hmm.
We're screwing them anyway.
Yep.
You know, I mean, we've screwed them pretty much as bad as you could screw them. But if we gave them a heads up and say, look, we're going to do a pullout, complete withdrawal of Syria over the course of 6 weeks, conduct yourselves accordingly.
Yeah.
You know. But now, they screwed the Kurds, one of our allies in the region, and now we're actually going to send tanks into the oil fields?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just all over the map. And what it is, it's Trump initially going with his instinct, pull out, and then listening to the hawks.
Yes.
So it's the worst of both worlds.
Yeah, which typical foreign policy.
Yeah.
Same thing with, like, the thing is this, when Obama was in office, a lot of the same things happened when Obama was there, because he would pull out and then go back in and then pull out and then go back in. You know, and they always tried to consider him to be weak, but if you think about it, the one thing that Obama did was he did assassinate American citizens without, I mean, like, I wouldn't call him weak in the fact that he was drone bombing people in seven different countries when Bush only had the balls to be in three of them.
Right, right. Well, and Obama, yeah, very similar. You know, his instincts were on the money, but he got talked back into it. And that really goes to show you how much influence the military industrial complex has.
Oh yeah.
They can literally, they're overriding the will of the commander in chief. And when you have the Pentagon coming out and the Pentagon saying, we are going to send tanks into the oil fields, when the president has said, you know,
a small number of troops.
Yeah. Well, initially said, we're going to pull out.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're getting out of Syria, and now it's, oh, well, no, we're just going to do this. No, we're just going to do this. You know what? You know, we're going to send in tanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's and for those of you who think that the president's in control and, you know, up against the deep state, yeah, there you go. There's your evidence. The deep state just kicked Trump's ass.
I mean, the thing about it is this, is that I think his initial instincts when it comes to foreign policy are to get our people out of these situations.
I agree.
However, when he knows he can't do it, then he tries to justify it some other way.
Why can't he do it though?
No, I'm saying when he feels like that he loses the argument or whatever.
When
like
he's been told by his superiors that he can't do it.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
When they say you can't do it and then they just don't do it. I think that what happens at that point is that then he just tries to do what he can there, and it ends up screwing it all up, because I think you got to get out of there. It's like the Ukraine thing, you know? I mean, we'll get to that in hour number two anyway, but, you know, a lot of these things are all the same thing. Like, you do have this deep state there that is just, and we're going to get into that article in the second hour too. I hate to say, it sucks because this one actually leaned into so many other ones.
Well, why don't you take it there? Let's take it there. We can throw around. This is our show. We can do whatever the fuck we want.
Well, that's true. We can. You're right.
You know, just because you put it on your magic paper there doesn't mean we have to follow the rules.
Okay, but this is
fucking color outside. Think outside the box, Alex. Color outside the lines.
Yeah, this is what the permanent bureaucracy does. The permanent bureaucracy that goes on in Washington, D.C. is there for one reason and one reason only, and it is not the betterment of the American citizenry. It is this perpetuation of their jobs and of the state.
Yep.
Is that once these people get in these positions, that the job that they have is to keep it going. And this is why they view the Democrats so well and the Republicans so badly. Because when the Republicans do like go out there and talk, they talk about shutting bureaucracies or limiting government and things like that. So even when they talk about it, they talk about those things. Trump is totally unpredictable. So when Trump is in there, the reason the deep state hates Trump so bad and why they view him as such the big, massive threat, like when they say he's the biggest threat that they've ever seen, he's right, because on a whim, he could close him down.
Right, but he won't.
But he's not gonna, because he's gonna listen to some other people, but he can. Like, he didn't make it through there because he was part of the machine, other than a part that was financing other candidates down the road. Like, he was never the guy that was, he didn't move up the chain from state house to governor to in Congress to run for president. Like, he wasn't owed a lot of stuff to get to the presidency.
Right, but he's had almost 3 years to do that, and he hasn't done any of that.
He's done very little of it, but he's done more than... when it comes to regulation, he's done a lot for that. Oh, no, not a... He's cut a historic amount of regulations.
Okay, nothing he has done can be considered draining the swamp or fighting the deep state. I mean, come on.
Here's the thing. Nothing. Ultimately, what you're talking about...
Okay. And his tax cut, I paid more in taxes this year than I did the year before.
Okay, what I will say is this. The stuff he has done represents a drop in the bucket.
Yeah.
However, even the drop in the bucket was historic compared to the continual... Look, the stuff that they have done when it comes to the regulations and stuff, there's a lot of stuff on that in that level where they've eliminated a lot of different regulations. And again, there's so many of them that it doesn't even matter at the end of the day. So I'll totally grant you that.
Right.
And there's things that, you know, Obamacare didn't go away, but the mandate did. You know what I mean? Like, so he has way more to do, but there's been some things that have gone on that have been okay. But again, this is why the situation itself is so useless, because there's a deep state that even for the little things that he's done, they're going after him full bore with stuff that like look at the Ukraine thing. How many people in Congress have family members over there getting $50,000 a month jobs? Hunter Biden's not the only one getting those jobs.
Right.
There's a whole industry going on right now when it comes to, you know, Congress people's kids in Ukraine right now.
Oh, yeah. It's like boarding school for them.
And like Trump wants to talk about like finding out about the corruption, which other people have actually done, that Biden himself bragged about, saying we told them we weren't going to give them that money until they got cleaned up the rack. Well, Trump was doing the same thing. Now, just because it was Hunter Biden he might have been looking for or might not have been looking for, there's no real way to say either way about that. But he was doing the same thing that these other guys have done, and they're going after him like he shot somebody. Like, the fact that they're going after Trump for bullshit. Like, you can hate Trump all you want, but what they're claiming is impeachable offense is utter bullshit. It really is. At the end of the day, it's complete bullshit. You can hate the guy. It is bullshit all day long, and it is political theater what's going on up there right now. But the reason it is the same reason that in those emails that Strzok and Page were saying to each other, this is the deep state's insurance policy, is we're going to leave this guy in litigation. I mean, there are people that are writing books anonymously that are in the staff of the president right now saying that I'm part of the resistance inside the White House. And the people are publishing this stuff. If there was a Democrat, that would never have happened during Obama's administration, because nobody in the administration would have done that. And the media would never have reported on it. But now the media will give it to the people front and center about, like, this is, again, when he talks about a coup and all this other stuff, like, it's not really a coup, but it's kind of a coup. Again, he's an a-hole, and he doesn't help himself at all in any of this
stuff.
He's
weak, is what he is.
I wouldn't say he's weak.
He is weak. That is what, ultimately, that's what Trump is. He is weak.
I don't know how you say that.
I say that because he is influenced by anybody. Anybody can influence
being a political weather vane isn't the same as being weak, though.
No, it is. It is a weakness. I wouldn't say that. When you were elected on the things he was elected for, and he hasn't done any of them, then yeah, he's weak. And the reason he hasn't done any of them is because he listens to all these people who he knows are conducting a coup against him.
I got to tell you, I see it way different than that. I do see it different than that. I think
I don't know how you do.
The guy makes tons of mistakes on stuff. The guy has no political acumen whatsoever. In all reality, if Trump would just put the Twitter down for a little while and just try to just shut up every once in a while, he actually would do better.
With the exception of a handful of regulations, how is he any different than Obama?
He's way more entertaining. He is way more entertaining.
Yeah.
And Obama talked
way... He's even better than Bush for entertainment.
And Obama talked way better than he did. Like, he had much more of... Like, look, the thing is this. You're dealing with a guy that is very reactionary. That he's reactionary all the time.
Emotionally, though. Not substantive.
He's
only emotionally reactionary when it comes to his own ego.
Yeah. No, he definitely isn't.
That's all it is. That's what... This presidency is a reality show, and I don't understand why people still support him, because everything that they elected him to do, he hasn't done, with the one exception of yelling at people. I guess that's what they really wanted. They wanted someone who would yell at Democrats. They got that.
I would give him more.
Oh, really?
More than that.
So, like, balancing the budget because he did
that? Well, no, he didn't do that.
Oh, raising the debt.
But no, he's horrible at spending.
Going after the deep state?
He's draining
the swamp.
Hold on. I will say this. He's exposing it, and that's probably the best thing you can ask for.
They're
exposing themselves, but I mean, look, it's obvious as the day is long right now of what's going on. You can see what these people are doing.
That was always obvious. I mean, just what we talked about.
It wasn't anywhere near. Wasn't obvious with Obama.
When I ran for governor, one of my policies was to fight the bureaucracy. Okay, to actually get the bureaucracy on board, I was going to go to each department and say, for every dollar that you cut from your budget, so getting away from baseline budgeting, which always goes up, and the bureaucrats always find a way to spend all their money so they get more next year, my plan was to say, for every dollar you cut, 10% of that goes into a bonus pool for you and your employees. So the more you cut, the bigger your paycheck. You know, do that. You want to cut the deep state, you do that. And next thing you know, you'll have a bunch of bureaucrats that are looking for ways to save money and reduce the size of their departments.
Yeah. No. Don't get me wrong. Look, there's a lot of truth to that. And again, I'm not giving the guy a complete pass, but what I am saying is that I think he's better than what you're putting him as.
I don't see it, though. I mean, you really have to give me specific examples. And so far...
I didn't think I was going to be in the defend Trump mood today. I got to tell you, I didn't think I was going to be there today.
I know.
This wasn't even part of the conversation we were going to have today on, like, this part of it, but...
Yeah, I don't know how we got there, but I love it because it's a free flow of
stream of thought.
Thank you. But yeah, you know, that's kind of my point.
But we do have a problem with a permanent bureaucracy that's there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And it is it is feeding itself, and it is... And it's from the FBI, the CIA, it's federal agencies, it's all this stuff.
And not only has Trump not done anything to fix it, he is now being controlled by it. And that was kind of my point.
Okay. I mean, here's the thing. I think he's still trying to fight it, I guess. But I would say that it's, unless you're willing to do, again, you can't beat it by continuing to allow it to exist. The only way that you beat it is by firing all of those people and not replacing them with other people. You fire and you close down. You have to close down departments.
Right. Yeah, you're not going to beat them
wholesale
on Twitter.
Yeah, well, yeah, and you're definitely not going to do it on Twitter.
Right.
And you got to bring people, and you have to... The other part of it was this. He had to have brought people in that were going to be committed to closing it down.
Right.
And he brought none of those people in. No. As a matter of fact, like, if you're going to bring in Bolton, you already are screwing it up now.
Right.
You know what I mean? And Christie and Giuliani, I mean, you want to talk about a moron. the people you brought in were, you'd have been better to keep Bannon in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, actually, don't get me wrong. He absolutely was a nationalist. He absolutely did not mind having a large state there because he was definitely
right,
not.
But if the deep state battle is your battle, you don't bring in Bolton.
Yeah, you definitely don't bring in Bolton.
And you don't bring in Giuliani. You don't bring in half these guys you brought in.
Oh, yeah. And all those guys were just making that, they realized what was going on.
Well, they realized that Trump's psychology is all you have to do is say a couple nice things about him and that you'll be loyal. And next thing you know, you're a cabinet member.
Yeah, as long as you're loyal. Yeah, that's the thing. As long as you're loyal. And that was one of Trump's problems is that because you didn't have the principle of we're going to close all this shit down and really mean it,
because
you're going to run into problems.
Trump doesn't actually have that principle. He doesn't have any principles other than the Trump brand and his own ego.
Well, and it was, you know what it was like too? And again, not to use a different subject, but when we were arguing for education changes in Florida, there was another group in the state that was arguing for education changes in Florida too. Our thing was freedom though. We want to stop the indoctrination from happening.
Right.
And the other groups that were supposed to be on our side, we're really just, we want our form of indoctrination in there instead of to eliminate the ability for it to happen at all.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And that's always a problem. And that's why, if you want to know why libertarians don't win elections, this is one of the reasons why. Because libertarians, in their core, are not there to actually reform the system. We're there to eliminate the government control of it and let you do it yourself.
That's the old slogan. Libertarians want to take over the government to leave you alone.
Yeah, we want to take over the world and leave you alone. And that's really what it comes down to. And it's the greatest strength that we have as a philosophy. And at the same time, it's the greatest weakness we have of actually getting things done.
Right. Well, it's the primary reason that we can't be organized, because we're fundamentally, predisposed to fight organization.
Because we're smart enough to know that you can't leave one person in charge for something as complex as our economy or of our healthcare system. And the real democracy that we like, and this is going to sound a little weird to say it this way, but the real democracy that we like is voluntary association and individuals making decisions voluntarily, and all those decisions adding up to the direction that we're going to have, the direction that we're going to take our country. But it's all done voluntarily, that it's not done via government fiat. It's done because you have, everybody gets to make their own decision. And if you want to say no, then you can say no. And enough people say no, then they're not going to do it.
Yeah, it's the magic of the market, man. It's the logic and the reason of the masses is how it... When you have a whole bunch of individuals who are, working together in their own self-interests, magic things happen.
Yeah.
Bad.
Here's the thing. It's not perfect, though. Bad things can still happen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Bad things still happen, but bad things happen on a much smaller scale.
Yeah.
When you have governments, you have bad things happening on, a nuclear kind of scale.
Yeah. Because maybe they're going to do overnight repos to $120 billion a night, where they're just printing money out of thin air again and again and again.
Yeah, and you went there. That's a weird segue, too. I thought we were going to take that into the other thing, but that's all right. We can go there. That's good.
I mean, if you want to talk about it, your money's now worth less. Because the New York Fed said Wednesday it's raising the minimum offerings for overnight repos to $120 billion from the minimum of $75 billion.
Yeah, they've been doing this pretty much nonstop. And I have a hard time, people don't really understand what's going on here. But this is a way to actually introduce more money into the market. And it's also a way to... Well, it's to fund deficit spending. Really, that's the bottom line.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at it, what's happening is the banks are going out and buying, bonds, bills, notes, basically debt instruments from the federal government. So the federal government is saying, we owe this money and we're going to pay it back with interest. And then the banks are going to the Fed. So that's from the federal government. So they're buying these treasury bills, treasury notes, treasury, all the various different types of instruments from the federal government. And then they're going to the Fed and saying, well, you know, we don't have the money to actually buy these, so we want to borrow it from you. And they're saying, okay, we'll lend it to you at a very low interest rate. But the Fed doesn't actually have the money, so they're just actually creating the money out of thin air, and that's what they're talking about here. So they're lending, basically the Fed is creating money to lend to the banks, which the banks then use at exceptionally low interest rates. At some point, it might even actually go negative interest rates.
Yeah, they think it's going that way.
Yeah, it probably will before long. Other countries have done it. So basically, Federal Reserve banks are going to be lending money at zero or negative interest rates to the banks. So they actually have to pay back less than they borrowed. And then they use that money to buy debt from the federal government, who pays them with nice interest rates.
Yeah.
You know, and the money that they used never existed before. So now that's more money in the actual monetary supply, which is by definition inflation. And inflation, the end result of inflation, is that dollar you had, because now there's more of them in circulation, is worth less than it was yesterday. So your purchasing power of that dollar, the prices aren't going up, the purchasing power of the dollar is going down. And that's what they're doing. And this is happening in the background. And the reason this is happening is because the deep state and Trump working together keep spending more and more money. Our federal budget this year is the highest it's ever been. World record.
Yeah. You know? World record.
World record. No government in the history of mankind has ever spent this much money.
Yeah.
Ever.
And it's only going to go up. It's not going to go down.
And by the way.
And that's a problem, by the way.
Coinciding with that, no government in the history of mankind has ever been this far in debt.
Yeah, well, you know, we're just breaking records left and right.
This is breaking all the wrong records. You know, now governments have printed more money than this, so we still got one record to break. But if we keep going this direction, eventually we will print more money than any government in the history of mankind. We still got, you know, we're many, many trillions away from catching up with Zimbabwe and Venezuela and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But you know, hey, you know, they start adding zeros to the currency. Next thing you know.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's true.
And then it'll take a wheelbarrow of cash to go buy a dozen eggs.
Yes, it will.
Yeah. And eventually you'll just stop using the cash because it makes more sense to burn it because firewood is too expensive. Yeah,
and everybody will be on Bitcoin.
Yeah, exactly.
The real people will be on Bitcoin at that point.
Which is, I don't know why I get so angry about it, because that's what I'm rooting for. So it's like, you know. Hey,
you know why? Because you know at the end of the day, you still don't want it to happen.
It's still sad. It's sad.
You don't want the pain. You don't want to see the pain that the country will have to go through and the death that will ensue because of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, you know, there's a lot of bad that can happen from it. But at the same time, it's like your dad catching you smoking a cigarette, man. He's going to make you finish the pack. I view Trump as the pack of cigarettes right now, actually. Like, that's the way I view Trump. I view Trump as he is the pack of cigarettes that we are forced to smoke.
You know, can I tell a quick story?
Go ahead.
My dad actually caught me drinking in eighth grade.
Wow.
Yeah, I actually got busted last day of school. Me and buddy skipped school and went to his house and raided his parents' liquor cabinet. And me, idiot, I had to catch the bus home, so I didn't want to walk home. So I went back to the last class of the day, shit-faced drunk. I was suspended for my first 10 days of high school. And so I get home, and my dad actually decides, okay, you want a drink? We're going to line them up. We're going shot for shot. And so we start doing, I'm like, all right, you know, I'm already shit-faced at this point. So like, you want a drink, son? We're going to drink the whole, you know, make you smoke pack of cigarette routine. So we start doing shots. And before long, I passed out. Now, before passing out, I think we did about 10 or 12 shots.
Oh, my God.
Right.
Like, this sounds like the beginning of like a homicide, though.
Well, it almost was, because my dad, now shit-faced at this point, decides, oh, he's passed out, I better throw him in the tub and turn the water on. So he does that, and then he forgets about me. So I'm passed out in the tub with the water running. And thankfully, my and he goes and just crashes in bed, you know. So thankfully, my stepmom did come home and find me in the tub, you know. My dad had the sense to drape one arm over the tub rail, so I was, like, you know, kind of propped up. I couldn't actually, you know,
oh my God,
fall completely under. So just a rule of thumb for parenting, that's probably not the best way to do it.
Probably not.
The smoke the whole pack of cigarettes or drink the whole bottle of booze. Oh, and it was different shit, man. He got the whole liquor cabinet out. So it wasn't just like we're doing shots of whiskey.
How'd you feel the next day?
Oh my God, I was sick. So I hit the liquor cabinet because I needed hair of the dog.
No, you didn't.
No, I didn't.
No, you didn't.
No,
you didn't.
I was sick. I didn't drink hard alcohol for like many years after that. Not till I was an adult. I actually went all through high school. Couldn't bear the.
So what he did worked.
What he did actually worked. I don't think he drank hard alcohol for a while either.
Oh, I can't blame him. Oh.
Yeah, so.
I can't do that anymore. Oh, man, I can't do that anymore.
No, you can't. That's a damn shame, because I actually kind of wanting to have a beer tonight, but I guess we can't do that, you know?
You know what? Here's the thing. You know what? Next time, Saturday, we'll have a beer ahead of time.
I mean, I got a long drive, so I can only do one, maybe two beers.
I'll have beer. For next Saturday, I'll have a beer. We're doing tonight, well, Friday, so yeah, I'm going to put it out. I'm putting it out tonight.
Well, that's a rule. I mean, if we have to do a Friday night,
then we'll have beer.
You have to buy me beer because.
What kind of beer would you like, by the way?
Well, you like the craft beer now.
Yeah, but what kind of craft? An IPA?
No, I'm not an IPA guy.
Okay, good. I hate IPAs.
I'm a dark ale kind of guy.
A dark ale.
Stout.
Okay.
I like a stout. If you can't do
I got to get two different kinds of beers.
Well, no. If you can do a moderately dark ale or an amber ale, I'm good with those.
Okay. All right. I'll figure something out, though. I'll give you something.
I like hearty beer. Guinness is like...
A
hearty beer, yeah.
A hearty beer.
I like to be able to chew my beer.
Okay. All right. That's good to know.
That's
good to know.
That's kind of what I like.
Well, we are coming close to the end of hour number one. So before we go, though, I wanted to thank David Webb. David Webb is our new curbside switcheroo level on Patreon.com. So if you would like to become a member and hear hour number two, you go to Patreon.com/unattendedbaggage. So Patreon.com/unattendedbaggage. But thank you, David, for becoming a member. And if you send me your address, David, I will send you your swag, because David did not send me his address. And there's a couple other people, I won't name them out right now, but make sure that I got your address, because after today, I've mailed everything out to everybody. So if you haven't gotten it, if you haven't gotten it sometime next week,
give it a couple weeks. Yeah. But yeah.
Only give it a week though. The mail, works good enough.
Yeah, if you haven't gotten it in a week or so, then yeah, we need your address.
So, but for hour number two, for those of you that are, if you'd like to listen,
hang
hour
on a second. Yeah, please do. And thank you to our new subscribers. But hour number two, we are going to actually talk about something. I learned a new word this week. Thruple.
Yeah. So
I never knew the word thruple before. And if you don't know what it is, it's kind of hot.
Yeah. Swear to God, not a plot of a porno.
Not a plot of a porno, but it could be one.
Russia going off the grid?
Not only off the grid. Pulling the switch, pulling the plug.
Pulling
the plug. Frightening stuff.
Protests
here.
Protests all around the world.
Crazy stuff going on. Crazy. And for interesting reasons. Interesting reasons. I want to get into some of that.
Yeah. And in a couple stats that are showing that everybody is being played like a fiddle.
Yep. Yep. So hour number two, if you want to hear it, go to patreon.com/unattendedbaggage and sign up. Be a subscriber. Help us out financially. Yeah, we ain't doing this shit for free. Am I here for your amusement?
Am I here to make
entertain
you?
You know, no. Cough up some money. So we'll see you in the second hour.
We'll see you in hour number two.